WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In the new film True Believer, James Woods stars as Eddie Dodd, a one-time civil liberties lawyer who now defends drug dealers. Robert Downey Jr. plays a young idealistic lawyer who comes to work for Dodd and pricks the conscience of the graying, ponytailed attorney. True Believer was directed by my guest Joseph Rubin. Rubin got his start directing teen exploitation films like The Pom Pom Girls and went on to direct Dreamscape and the 1987 cult film The Stepfather. In this scene from True Believer, Robert Downey Jr. accuses his new boss of having abandoned his values.
I've helped acquit a coke dealer, a speed dealer.
I specialize, Roger.
An angel dust dealer.
I'm not a kid anymore.
Speed manufacturer.
So get a job on Wall Street. I'm sure your rich daddy can arrange it.
Look, man, don't tell me where to work. I came to New York to work for Edward Dodd, but I just can't believe that Edward Dodd has nothing better to do these days than invoke exalted legal issues to get off guilty little...
You want to be a criminal defense attorney? Then know this going in. Everybody's guilty. Everybody.
You know that you wouldn't have said that 10 years ago?
10 years is a long time.
Were James Woods and Robert Downey Jr. already cast when you took on the film?
No. In fact, at the first meeting with the producers, they asked me who did I see in the role of Eddie Dodd, and I said James Woods. And they sort of looked at each other, and I was thinking, oh, okay, that it was a nice try to get this job. And then they said, well, you know, we're thinking along the same lines, so... Woods really became the first and only choice. Anyone else, I think, would have made the character too soft at the edges, too immediately likable. What we were going for with that character was a guy who, when you first meet him, you're not sure how you feel about him. And that gradually, as the movie goes on, you start to get behind him and start to root for him ultimately. We didn't want a puppy dog actor, and Woods is certainly not a puppy dog actor.
James Woods isn't the kind of actor that's a chameleon, where he's totally different and unrecognizable in each role. And there are certain, almost like James Woodsisms, that I find greatly enjoyable to watch. What does that pose for you as a director? What kind of questions does that raise for you as a director?
Well, when you hire Woods, you know you're going to get certain things. You're going to get a tremendous intelligence. That worked totally for this character. This is a lawyer, a brilliant lawyer in some ways. And, you know, you get a fire out of Woods. That's what you're getting when you hire him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, there are all different ways of working with Jimmy. You can't tell Jimmy, you can't give Jimmy direction like, be angrier. Because then he'll blow the roof off. You've got to make real subtle adjustments with him. About 20% of the time between a take, I'd come up to him to give him some adjustment. And he'd go, I know, you want me to do da-da-da-da? And I go, yeah, that's exactly it. He's very aware as an actor. He's very savvy. So you got to talk to him straight, and you try to manipulate him and forget it. Then you've lost him immediately. Because he's smarter than you are, and if you don't believe it, he'll tell you.
There are several prison scenes in the movie, and as I was watching those scenes, I was thinking about what interesting faces the actors had and how believable those faces were in the role.
Well, it's
the roles of prisoners. And then, I read the press kit and found out, well, gosh, a lot of these people really are prisoners that you were using as extras, and there were also people, from the Hell's Angels and from halfway houses.
Right.
What, it must be kind of interesting as a director to be working with dozens of people who aren't really actors, but who are, in fact, pretty tough guys.
Oh yeah. Well, the movie opens in prison, and we didn't want to do it on a sound stage with extras. We went to Folsom Prison outside San Francisco, which is the toughest prison in California. It's mostly lifers and long-term sentences. And the guys there are extremely tough, extremely dangerous. Before they would let us in, the prison administration made us sign a no-hostage release, meaning that we understood that if we were taken hostage, they would do no negotiating on our behalf, and that we were, in a sense, on our own. See, the movie really becomes, in a certain sense, about Eddie Dodd, the Jimmy Woods character, fighting to free an innocent man. And it was important to us that early in the movie, even though there's not much in prison, that what was there would quickly give a little sense of the hell of living in a world like that.
What kind of security did you have when you were shooting the prison scenes in prison with prisoners as extras?
We had guards, and they had guys on these gun rails with live ammunition. We were told if anything happened, don't run, because anyone running, in effect, they feel is running away from something and is guilty and is a target. The other thing they were afraid of was that some of the prisoners might slip in with the crew as we were leaving. So when we were finished shooting, they put us in this sort of big open pen and took 2 hours to count all the inmates in Folsom to make sure that they had the right count.
Well, there is a scene early on in the movie where someone actually does get knifed. I don't mean in real life, I mean in the movie.
Right.
So someone gets knifed and there's a little mini riot that breaks out.
Right.
Were you allowed to use prisoners as extras in that scene?
No, not that scene. I mean, that scene was too volatile and too violent. That's when we used the Hell's Angels and ex-cons and you know, people that looked right and felt right and understood that world a little bit.
The film that you did right before True Believer was called The Stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
And this was about a sociopath who wants to have the perfect family. The perfect family that he imagines everyone else has. So what he does is he marries widows with children, and when they disappoint him because they're not the perfect family, he kills them, creates a new identity, and finds another family to marry into. What spoke to you about that story?
Well, what interests me was that this guy clearly was a psychopath and an awful person, but in his dream of a home and a family, I found that sympathetic. So to me, that's always interesting when you have an awful character who has a very sympathetic drive. So that was the initial spark for me. And it also seemed an opportunity to kind of poke fun at kind of the image of what life should be like and rarely is. And I thought it could be funny and scary. And I like movies that shift tones quickly, where something horrifying happens and then something very funny happens right on top of it. Because that's what interests me. I mean, to me, the funniest things happen at the most awful times. And I like movies that kind of try to do that thing.
The Stepfather never did well commercially, but it got some rave reviews, including from Pauline Kael.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really become something of a cult film. Why do you think the film did so poorly?
I would say two things. Marketing. It was a tough movie to market, and they never quite figured out how to do it. And secondly, I think for a mass audience, what it was sort of dealing with and saying may not be what they were particularly interested in hearing. It's funny because it actually did extremely well in video and did strong foreign to the point where they're doing a sequel. You know, we beat up Jerry Blake, we shot him, we knifed him through the heart, but it turned out we didn't kill him at all. He's coming back. We should have done a better job of getting rid of him.
The distribution company for The Stepfather did different ad campaigns trying to advertise it as a thriller, as a slasher film, as a horror film. Was that interesting for you to watch and to see if the different ad campaigns registered a different response?
I wouldn't say interesting. I would say painful.
Mm-hmm.
They had it. It was very difficult. They really gave it their best shot, but they didn't know what to do with it. And it was only the critics that sort of saved it from oblivion.
So what was the moral for you of this experience?
Well, for me, it's really just a question of trying to make good movies. And from good movies, things happen so you can make other movies. And so in that sense, there was no moral. It got me some good scripts, and it ultimately got me a script that I loved and a movie that, I mean, True Believer is definitely the first movie that I made that I know I would have gone to see. The others, I don't know. I might never have seen The Stepfather or Dreamscape myself, so I can't blame the public. But True Believer, I would definitely, that kind of movie, kind of a movie with a good story and strong characters, that's the kind of movie I run out to see myself.